You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson and this is the Food Talk Show, an hour of discussing and quite often tasting innovative food and drink products, food tech, food trends, well, just about anything to do with the food and drink sector, really. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, the lovely Guy Routledge, co-founder of The Food Rush. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Sue. How are you doing today?
Yes, very good indeed. I'm quite excited about this programme.
You seem very chipper this morning.
I am very chipper.
Have you had a nice walk or something?
No, I've been, to the gym.
Oh, you've been to the gym? Mm. Oh, that sounds terrible.
I know it is, but you've got to do it as you get older. Anything interesting you want to tell me about this week?
Interesting. No. Nothing really springs to mind. I'm trying to avoid alcohol at the moment, which is probably the opposite of interesting in my world because I drink a lot of wine. But that's a bit of an issue, really. It's why I'm slightly round around the middle. Dry May for a change.
May. Well, good luck with that one.
It's a bloody nightmare, yeah. I tell you.
Yes, good luck with that one. Now, today we are joined by Craig Hughes of Hippies, and he's going to tell us all about his lovely product. And he is doing really, really well at the moment with his company. So we're very interested to learn all about that. And also Justin Cadbury. Now, I came across Justin's company and his product, I think it was at Food Matters Live, one of these big exhibitions.
Big trade show.
I was so wowed by this product, but it's quite difficult to explain. So we can't wait to talk to Justin because I've got to have one.
I want one of these in my house. I have grill envy.
Yeah, grill envy. That's an interesting one. Okay.
We'll talk about that a bit more later in the show.
We will talk about that a bit more later. So, Craig, hi there. Sitting in the studio and we're surrounded by huge bags of Hippies. They're yellow.
It's a brightly coloured studio
this
morning.
Very brightly coloured. They look incredible. Do you want to just tell us exactly what this product is? Because Justin's joined us and he wants to taste them. And he has no clue what they are.
No clue.
So Hippies is a chickpea-based snack that is high in fibre, high in protein, less than 100 calories a bag, and is completely organic and free from. So it also appeals to vegans and vegetarians. No MSG. And also has a huge brand personality that you can see on pack there.
Yeah, you've got In Herbs We Trust.
We do.
What else we got?
We've got Pepper Power.
Pepper Power.
Far Out Fajita.
And Cheese and Love.
Cheese and Love. And Sweet and Smoking as well.
Sweet and Smoking as
well. So a whole range of different flavoured chickpea puffs, you describe them as.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Are you actually a hippie? Were you a hippie?
I think it might have been slightly... in my earlier days, having been born in 1970,
long hair and
I wish for long hair. Unfortunately, those days have gone.
Maybe a modern day hippie,
sitting in a very
sharp looking, I believe, Puff Daddy waistcoat.
Puff Daddy waistcoat. That is correct. Yes,
very smart.
He's looking very dapper.
And thank you.
We greeted the guests this morning and I was sitting there with our social media guy, Harry, and we were both sitting there in like jeans and a t-shirt thinking we didn't get the memo about having to dress up for today.
You're not known for your sartorial elegance.
No, I'm not.
But we're joined by two very dapper gentlemen today.
Indeed.
So as the name of the company suggests, your product's based on the ideology of being a hippie, really, which is people who want goodness.
Correct.
Their mind, their body, and their soul. And according to, I don't know whether it's true or not, you're going to tell me, the chickpea plant naturally releases nitrogen back into the earth as they grow. So the chickpea is a hippie type of plant, really.
That is correct, yeah. So chickpeas naturally release nitrogen into the soil, which helps obviously fertilise the soil. It's a key issue in Africa, and it's something that we're very strong and passionate about in terms of trying to do good. So Part of the selling point behind the brand is for every bag of hippies, we give a penny away to Farm Africa. And our mission is to create sustainable chickpea farming out of Africa. So that's a really strong social cause that we're really passionate about.
Could you just tell us a little bit more about the Farm Africa charity, just to kind of give it a bit of context
for
everybody?
How did you get involved?
Yeah, well, when we were looking at the brand and looking to create something unique and different, one of the important things about the brand was bringing, I guess, social change, positive social change, which was important around the brand. So we looked for partners, we looked at opportunities, and Farm Africa just felt like a natural fit in terms of what we were doing. It felt like it was a natural place for the brand to sit. And based on that, we got in touch with Farm Africa. They were very pleased, obviously, to hear from us. And so far, we've contributed over £30,000 already this year in terms of funding to Farm Africa. And that will continue, obviously, as the brand grows from strength to strength.
That's stunning. They must have loved you when you phoned up. Oh, my goodness, Christmas has come.
Yeah.
And this is about sub-Saharan Africa, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So what's particularly special? Is it those communities are struggling because of the weather and all sorts of other...
So the soil types in those particular regions are obviously impacted by the weather. We believe that using chickpeas, we can naturally help in terms of help fertilising the soils in those regions. So it's a big thing that we're passionate about. We're going to continue to push on and try and create more sustainable chickpea farming in Africa as we obviously continue to grow within the UK and globally.
Is that where your chickpeas are actually farmed at the moment?
They're farmed in all sorts of different places. So at the moment, because of the supply of chickpeas, we're having to source those from a variety of different locations around the world. But our goal and our aim is to create sustainable chickpea farming in Africa over the longer term.
I think there used to be a thing about charity where you raise lots of money, you know, like the Bob Geldof style.
Sure.
And then you get millions of pounds and you dump it somewhere in Africa and you try and do that. But I think we've all learnt a lot since then. Actually, what that does is it displaces economies.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
So if somebody's trying to do something and suddenly something else turns up, in that region, whatever, they then can't sell what they're doing or and actually it does ruin the economy.
Sure.
It's not sustainable. And I think what's really important with people like Farm Africa is what you're trying to do is you're trying to help local communities move away from poverty themselves.
Sure.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to point out that obviously we've only been trading now for just over a year, so it's still very early days in terms of our relationship with that organisation. But yeah, I mean, that's the goal. We want to create social change in a positive way and create some momentum and get, obviously, those guys out of kind of the current famine and moving forward and obviously driving some sustainable kind of wealth creation within those kind of areas.
And creating pride in what people are doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well. Yeah, good.
I'm sure it's something that's a great thing for the consumers of your product to get behind as well. I think we're seeing this a lot at the moment. Lots of rather than just a brand, but it's like a brand with purpose. And
sure.
I think, it's not necessarily something that should be used as a marketing tactic, although I'm sure it probably works to a degree. But I think people they're looking for not just like snacks with benefits or healthy benefits or whatever, but they're looking for something with more of a cause behind it as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we don't put the Farm Africa piece front of pack, so we're not going out there to do this specifically to create extra marketing behind the product. It is a genuine purpose that we have. Mm. So I think, brands need to be careful. This is,
you don't want to look too cynical by using it as a marketing.
You're playing with people's emotions, and there needs to be real intent and desire and passion around creating this. So that's really important to us.
Yeah, it's done really tastefully, actually. Just looking at the back of the pack, it says, peace, love, and giving back. And it just kind of says, go online to find out more. It's nothing too kind of in your face, which is a really nice touch.
Yep. That's good. I'm feeling a little bit peckish with these in front of me. Before we open a couple of packets, as you just mentioned earlier, you only started this properly in February 2016, and yet you've got projected sales for 2017 of 3 million. How did you manage to scale up that quickly? Because it's a real perennial problem in the food sector, is how do I scale up quickly?
It's actually more than that.
It's actually more than that.
So by the end of this year, we'll be probably 5 million at retail, which is great.
And that's in the UK, is it?
That's in the UK. You're probably aware that we've also launched in the US as well. We have a unique relationship with Starbucks. So again, as we sold in the product into both continents, Starbucks were very interested and took the product into 15,000 outlets.
And that helped a lot.
It did, yes.
Okay. So. And I'm just sort of asking Justin, with your company, scaling up quickly is quite hard. And if we look at Craig's stuff here, he's gone from two people to 22, you know, in a very short time. Scaling up quickly when you're successful is tough, actually, and it's quite risky.
Yes, it is. In our business, obviously, it's really completely different. It's not a food product. It's really the first grill change for 30 years in grill technology. So you're moving people from a carburetor into something like fuel injection. And that takes quite a lot of mind shifting. And so it is much slower. You have a much higher entry barrier. But once you're in there, and once people have seen the product and seen what it does, then they'll stay with it. But you need to lift them over that learning curve.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll talk about that later because it is difficult when you've got a product. The same with Hippies. You know, how do you explain what's inside just by the packet? Yeah. It's actually quite hard, isn't it? Can I taste some now?
You can, yeah. That's been quite a challenge for us, actually. Yeah.
How do you explain?
The packaging itself, I think, is one of the big key learnings that we've had, is that it's not immediately obvious what the product is. Mm. If you've been exposed to chickpeas, you may get what's inside the pack. But a lot of people were saying, well, we think it might be a bag of chickpeas.
So you can hear all this crack. This is us opening packets at the moment. So they look like Wotsits.
They do, yes.
But not that horrible orange colour.
They're super, super good for you.
So Wotsits, but good for you. I've got the cheese and love. What have you got there, Guy?
I've got Far Out Fajita. Let's have a taste.
Sorry about the noise.
Mine says in herbs we trust.
There we go. And that will go with your granola that you had for breakfast this morning you were telling me about.
So you'll see very shortly a very distinct change in terms of the packaging. We took some advice from retailers around the proposition. We initially launched with obviously a classic design on the front of pack. We'll be making a slight adjustment moving forward, which is actually having puffs on pack. So it's immediately obvious to people in terms of what they are. What we're trying to do is obviously make sure people go from potato-based products to more healthier products. And there's a bridge that you need to get people to cross. We believe having puffs on pack will be part of, I guess, the encouragement to make that leap into chickpea puffs.
Now, I actually do eat Wotsits. I'm afraid to admit.
That has got to be the fact of the podcast for me.
I don't know whether to walk out right now.
No, I got slated many weeks ago for eating instant noodles, but now Sue is freely admitting that she eats Wotsits.
You know I don't eat rubbish food much at all.
No, I know.
You know that. But
you go to the gym, don't you?
I do go to the gym.
To work off all those Wotsits.
I know it doesn't look like I do, but anyway, I do. this is my secret guilty pleasure. I don't have them very often, but occasionally. I think it reminds me a bit of being a child, really. Mm. And they're disgusting. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
No, you're absolutely right. But these are wonderful. And we shouldn't really be talking about the two things.
I'm trying to explain the difference. So they've got that, Wotsits have got that sort of mazy feel, and they get stuck in your teeth. And then God only knows what the colouring and flavouring is, but they get all over your fingers. So all your fingers are orange.
Yeah.
And they actually get in your fingernails. And your teeth look awful. I mean, the whole thing's absolutely dreadful, really. I don't even know what's in them. So these are Wotsits. They're the same shape, the texture's completely different. There's a really nice bit of bite in there.
Yeah, there's a really good crunch to it. But they are still nice and light, almost, you know, like a Wotsit or a Quaver or something.
Puffy.
Yeah, puffy, I guess. Yeah, and, makes a lot of sense.
The flavour, I can get chickpeas for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a slight hummus background in there as well.
There is. It's a very nice hummus background. I've tasted the cheesy ones. They're not as cheesy as Wotsits cheese, obviously.
They're not.
Is there any cheese in Wotsits? I'm not sure that there is.
I don't think there is. But no, they've got a nice cheesy flavour to them. I've just had the fajitas one. Have you had that one?
Yeah, I've had it. It's nice. It's got just a really subtle kind of warmth in the back. What have we got here?
Sweet and smoking. That's a top seller.
Sweet and smoking. Well, I'm going to taste that one now. If we can go back to the packaging, again, it is difficult to explain, isn't it? And you've got literally, half a second? If somebody's in a shop and walking past, you've got to capture their attention immediately.
Yeah, the dwell
you?
Time at fixture for products like this is literally, it's a nanosecond. So you really have to focus on having something that's really disruptive, that really grabs people's attention, but also gives them an opportunity to make that assessment and actually challenge their current repertoire in terms of products that they're currently buying. That's why we're moving to Puffs on Pack, which I believe will give us a more positive kind of sales result currently in terms of, you know, getting people over that bridge.
Because you've got some, because at the front of the pack at the moment, I'm trying to, for the benefit of our audio listeners, trying to describe what we've got. The front of the pack is like a big illustration it's like a character with a chickpea as an eye and then a big kind of licky smiley face.
That's correct.
And then on the back of the pack, there is actually like, I think it's a photo of some of the puffs, but are you planning to put them the other way around? So the puffs are on the front and the characters on the back.
Yeah. Because of that, literally that nanosecond of people appraising products, they need to understand what the products are. Mm. And all of their products have very, very striking packaging and it's very eye-catching. Certainly having puffs on pack will drive rate of sale beyond where it is today, which is even strong, but even stronger. So,
I mean, I spent my whole life working in marketing for my sins. And the real issue with FMCG, so that's fast moving consumer goods, the things that, you know, are not high value and they shift quite a lot of volume, is getting people to try it once.
Correct.
That's the thing. Yeah. Getting the horse to water. If people like it, they will then come back. But it's getting that first taste, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we'll be spending 50% of our marketing investment in sampling alone.
Wow.
So we're currently in London sampling around all the major tube stations and driving as much trial of the product as we can. I think, you know, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. It's about trialing the product. If you get people to try this, actually, they really kind of buy into the proposition.
But it's got to taste amazing.
It's got to taste amazing, and they do.
It's a given. Now, if it's gluten-free, what's it free, everything free, vegan blah, 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 it's still got to taste amazing. Whereas before it didn't have to, but it now definitely does.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. There's no compromise on taste, especially within snacking. Mm. You look at the hierarchy of needs, taste is up there in terms of one and two, in terms of the hierarchy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, the key thing I noticed was there's no aftertaste, which I think is really so
it's
nice.
Very clean,
often
isn't it?
Unlike Wopsits that stay with you for 2 years.
I'm not sort of a Wopsits expert, but I've eaten a few crisps and they do tend to sort of stay with you. And so if you're enjoying a drink along with it, it can then affect the taste of the drink.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to give you a few chickpea statistics here, Justin, just in case you didn't know these. Chickpeas are the most commonly produced in India, although obviously you're trying to get them into sort of Africa as much as possible, and they offer very specific benefits to a healthy diet. So 1 cup serving of chickpeas provides 29% of your daily value of protein and 49%, so that's about half, of the daily value of fibre. And we're not eating enough fibre because so many people are cutting bread out these days.
I'm definitely not doing that.
I know you're
not. I'm eating far too much bread. It's homemade, at least.
Mm. And they also contain vitamins and minerals, and they do significantly boost your intake of manganese and folate. So not bad altogether, are they, these chickpea things?
Ah, it's a very healthy alternative to the potato. Very
absolutely,
healthy.
Yeah. And have you intentionally gone down that route to kind of appeal to certain types of buyers and stuff like that? Sorry to cut off your chickpea facts.
Can I just tell you one more thing? I've got one more left, which is we Brits really love hummus for some reason. I don't know why. We're like the capital of hummus in the whole world. Yeah. We are literally the hummus capital of Europe, and we spread, dip, and dollop our way through 12,000 tons a year. So
that's incredible. That's a lot of hummus, isn't it?
No, we naturally like chickpeas, so I think you've hit on a bit of a vein here.
Absolutely.
So, sorry, Guy. No.
I was just saying that, you know, this is a product. It's a snack with benefits, which I believe is like a technical term in the industry for, you know, this type of product.
Sure.
Did you intentionally go looking for something like that to appeal to certain types of consumer, or are you just following the trends, why chickpeas?
Well, if you look at the major food trends, free from vegan, vegetarian, fiber, there's a big explosion in terms of protein right now. So a lot of consumers are buying into protein. These products deliver against all those major food groups. So it makes complete sense to bring something like a chickpea. Plant-based food is becoming the norm.
It's huge, yeah.
So we believe that we're in the right place with the right product, with the right brand.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic.
It does look fantastic.
And tastes fantastic as well.
Let's talk a little bit about you.
Oh dear.
So you spent 8 years at the Campbell Soup Company. And do you have the cheek to laugh at me eating what? No, I don't mean that.
It was actually 8 years at Heinz, and it was about 4 years at Campbell's before that. So yeah, I spent most of my life in what you would call big box corporate FMCG big food companies.
Mm. And you were sort of customer director, and then you moved to Kraft Heinz as impulse director.
Yeah,
it's an interesting title, isn't it?
What is that? Hello, I'm
it
impulse.
Was heading up the impulse channel. So
is that impulse buy?
Impulse customers.
Mm.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit of theory on that because before we went on the show, you were talking about behaviour.
Yeah.
And trying to understand consumer behaviour.
Yeah.
Is that to do with your impulse and insight sort of background?
Yeah, I think, I guess me coming onto the project, I spent most of my years, I think 28 years, living and breathing the consumer world. So I think, you know, I've got a pretty good appreciation of consumer need states. I understand customers. I bumped into our CEO, Livio Besterzo, who was previously involved with Little Miracles, which is another organic tea brand. I bumped into him in a pub in West London. We got talking. We had the same value set around what we were trying to do, around being entrepreneurial, interested in health and wellness, bringing affordable health to the masses. And we just gelled. So from there on in, I kind of, it was a natural kind of step for me to take in terms of coming onto the project and getting really actively involved and using my experience of Heinz and Campbell's to help navigate through not only the customer journey, but also the consumer journey as well.
So presumably, you know, that's what's allowed you to move so quickly and get so many sales because of your background and what you've seen. But it is different having a big brand as opposed to starting with from a zero base almost.
It's very different.
Have you learned much?
Roll the sleeves up. It's in the trenches. It's taking angry phone calls from buyers. It's facing rejection on a daily basis. It's writing out new line forms for retailers. It's up to your eyeballs in admin. It's very, very different. I come from a background of being at board level at Heinz and having pretty much all of those things.
Somebody sending your emails for you
exactly.
And doing your diary, and now you've
so
got to empty the bins.
It's been an education, but if you want to live in the startup world, you have to be prepared to roll your sleeves up and get stuck in, and if you're not prepared to do that, then
I've come across quite a lot of people who've been in big business. I have myself as well, you know, in international PLCs, and then moved to you know, running your own or being part of a small company. It's a pretty tough transition, and lots of the things that you take for granted, they just aren't there.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
And if you don't get those sales, you're dead, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've used my experience definitely to drive the sales line, but I think, look, you're only as good as the team and the people that sit around you. So I think we've brought some good people and the product, and we've brought some very, very good people on board that have history and background in dealing with these kinds of startup businesses. And we brought people in from different kind of small to medium sized businesses that have experienced the journey and know how to get it done. So I feel very privileged and honored to have worked and continue to work with some really great people. And I think that's the reason why we are where we are today.
And Justin, at Synergy Grill, again, for you, I know you're chairman, which is a slightly different role, isn't it? Although I know you're very involved in the business. Getting the right people is everything for your business, isn't it? Getting the right people around you.
Yes, you have to make sure your whole team work together and you've got the same vision. And the other thing is that we've moved slightly from a startup now to a growth company, and that calls for a separate skill range. Some people are very good at starting up businesses, but when you have outside shareholders and further responsibilities, you need a different sort of skill set.
Mm.
And sometimes it's quite hard for people to make that transitional move.
In your view, and I'm quite interested what Craig feels about this, what is the sort of period at which growth becomes a different skill set? You know, do you think it's about turnover, or do you think it's a certain number of people? I mean, I think that from my business, you know, we've gone from naught to 18 people in 2 years. But we had a really good view of how that shape would be, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And the most difficult thing is having maybe 4 or 5 people and then thinking, oh my goodness, I need another 10. Hmm. But actually, they can't all be doing this or all be doing that. I've got to reshape my business, to make sure it's a coherent team. At what point do you think you need to get serious, I suppose, is what I'm saying, and more formal in your processes?
Well, exactly like really Craig said, it's all sales driven. It's all about your sales. And it's really quite easy to assume when you go into a market, and we're selling to pubs and clubs and restaurants for the Synergy Grill, So you immediately look at the big players on the market and you think, well, let's go and see the big players because they've got X thousand outlets. What you don't realise is they have a natural reluctance to change. It's really the old IBM.
They're going to do it the way they're going to do it.
And I suppose we're the Apple because nobody got sacked, so, supposedly, for buying an IBM. So it's only when you bring change into the market. So you can often start by going after the wrong people because they're the biggest and they're not so. So it's the smaller, more more creative.
Makes it easier sell, who, does it?
Well, yes.
Yeah, because they've got that mindset, you know, they're thinking slightly differently.
Yes, I mean, if I give you two completely different views of it, the Sindri grill will cut your gas bill by half. Now, a lot of chefs, frankly, don't really care because they'll say, I don't know what the gas bill is anyway, and I'm not paying the bill.
Fair enough.
So you go along and see the finance director.
A bit like my children.
And you say to him, well, the food tastes far better because we can prove we've done the blind tasting and it puts all the vaporized natural oils back. And so the managing director will say, well, I don't care about the food taste. I only care about the saving energy. So before you know what, it's very difficult to find who's really going to make the decision maker. And that's the other key challenge you have is finding the decision maker. Very often the chef thinks he's running the show and the managing director thinks he's running the show, but the reasonable manager knows that it's him who's running the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So getting the right person.
Finding the right priorities.
So Craig, you said that you sort of got into Starbucks. That must have mean you're producing 5 bags a week and all of a sudden you're producing 50,000 bags a week. I'm exaggerating. How on earth did you manage that? It's a really difficult step.
In terms of getting the distribution in
suddenly,
Starbucks.
Suddenly having to produce far more than you ever did in a sort of step change.
Because it becomes like a milestone where you have to change the way that you've been operating so that you can now fulfill this, you know, much bigger demand.
I think you have to spend time with your co-manufacturers, making sure that you've got the right level of capacity in the supply chain to accommodate that kind of growth. I think the danger that I have seen, especially around startups, is there tends to be a lot of head down kind of moving at 1,000 miles an hour trying to get the customer and the sales line going, but there's not enough attention that's really paid to, I guess, the back end in terms of the operations and supply chain. I think being and living in this world, I think one of my key learnings is you have to constantly put your head above the parapet and make sure that you're looking and future-proofing your supply chain and your production and your manufacturing. So we're very, very lucky. Our co-manufacturing facility in the UK has capacity to continue to cope with the growth curve of hippies, so we're very fortunate.
But what about, you know, you're saying, my God, I've got to get another 40,000 tons of chickpeas. Where do I go? Surely that's an issue because you can find South Africa. Yeah, you can find production facilities. Let's face it, and then they'll take the work on. But it's getting the natural ingredients and getting them to make it in the way exactly that you want it to be made.
Yeah, I mean we're going through, I guess, a process right now of reevaluating our raw material sources. It is an issue for us. So sourcing quality ingredients from specific parts of the world in quantities that you need is an issue right now. So we're having to look in different parts of the world to source other chickpea raw materials. What you often find with those raw material ingredients, there tends to be some variability in the chickpea content, which can impact manufacturing capability. So we have to make sure that we've got the right quality and the right ingredients going through the factory. But it is an issue.
And how do those chickpeas arrive? I mean, do they arrive in a bag? Like, you know, you get them in tins.
You have to soak them overnight. Yeah, I mean, which is the worst part.
No, we have bags of chickpea flour, so they're already ground down and in a position where, from a manufacturing standpoint, we can handle the product.
That's not so bad then. And obviously that's an ambient product.
Is.
So phew, thank goodness for that.
Certainly simplifies things a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then when you went to a contract manufacturer, did you say, right, I want them to be exactly the same size? What's it? Or no, with this shape and this texture, you know, how did you get through that process?
We had a view in terms of what the product should look like and taste. We worked very, very hard with a raw material supplier called Cambridge Commodities, who's one of our partners. Worked very, very hard with that organisation to make sure the quality of the raw material ingredients that we're using, and then the manufacturing process with the co-partners was what we needed. So very meticulous in terms of making sure that we got the product that we wanted. It did take, because it's a brand new product. Mm. We're in new territory here. There has never been a chickpea puff on the market like this. So there was a lot of playing around with the product. So it was a lot of trial and error.
Must be great when you go to dinner parties. What do you do? I make chickpea puffs.
Yeah.
I must sit next to you.
It's a conversation starter for sure.
Exactly.
Having a job title called Puff Daddy, to be honest with you, that is the conversation stopper.
Puff Daddy. It's very good. Very good.
And he's got the shirt to prove it.
Yeah. We're going to come back to Craig, but also obviously talk to Justin after our little pre-record here. We're talking to Mark of Beanie's Coffee, and we met him at the International Food Expo, and he's going to tell us all about Beanie's Coffee. So let's listen to Mark and we'll come back to you in 5 minutes.
I've come over to a stand, it's called Beanie's, the company, and I'm with Mark, who is the commercial director. Now, the thing that immediately draws me to this is coffee with 2 calories. So Mark, can you tell me a little bit more about your product?
Yeah, so it's instant coffee in the main, in jars. It's 2 calories a cup, as you say, and also no sugar added, which obviously is a big concern for a lot of people nowadays. We have 16 flavours in our jars of coffee, everything from cookie dough to mint chocolate, hazelnut, Irish cream. Even at Christmas, we have a Christmas pudding flavour as well. And what we find is that people are not just drinking it as a coffee, but they're also substituting Beanie's for a cake or a biscuit or a sugary snack. But because they can get the taste of that type of product from a cup of Beanie's flavour coffee, it means that their taste buds are satisfied and they're not gaining any weight from it. So we have a lot of members, a lot of fans who are Slimming World members who might be looking after their weight, counting calories, diabetics. And because of that, we've got a constant range of new products coming, innovation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I've ever come across flavoured coffee other than sort of the disgusting syrups that you'll find in sort of the big chains, which is obviously full of sugar. Yeah. So, I mean, where did the idea come from for like, the different flavours?
Well, there's a gentleman called Mark Porteous who created the company around 2009. He had the idea. He started out very small in his garage, you know, typical small business. But in 2013, the business got some additional investment. And we then managed to get listings in Tesco, in Sainsbury. And we also have a large business online as well because we've got 200,000 Facebook fans in the UK. And they're very interactive, very interested to know about new flavours. And because that community is very vibrant, that also means that we have quite a big online shop business as well.
Yeah, I mean, to people like me who don't know, like with a normal cup of coffee, how many calories are you expecting sort of in a normal cup of coffee?
Well, a normal cup of coffee, a non-flavoured coffee, wouldn't have any calories, but we don't compare ourselves with that. Because people are drinking Beanie's instead of a sugary snack, we're more comparable with those, to be honest. But what we also find with Beanie's is that because the flavours are good, people are putting them into things like protein shakes to improve the flavour of those, or they're putting them into baking recipes. So we're finding, especially through feedback on Facebook, lots of different uses that people are coming up with.
So something that I suppose you can have hot or cold then?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the new innovations we've got is we've actually been able to now add vitamin D to our coffee. So we've just launched 3 flavours, vanilla bean, cherry chocolate and apple cinnamon. And 1 cup would be your daily vitamin D requirement.
Oh wow, so there's so many health benefits obviously to this. You mentioned that the company started in 2009. Has it sort of been something that's taken off quite quickly, or has it sort of taken a while to get off the ground?
Well, any small business obviously takes time to grow, but certainly in the last 3 years, it's really accelerated. So we're a British business based up in Darlington in County Durham. Still growing, but very much ambitious and lots of plans for the future.
So you mentioned before, obviously you're looking to get it into the supermarkets, things like that. How's that been going, the discussions over that?
Yeah, very good. We've got some flavours in Sainsbury already. We've got some flavours in Tesco. We're talking to other supermarkets now, and obviously that's why we're at this trade show as well. So we're getting lots of interest in our regular product, but also in our new vitamin D line as well.
So in terms of, say, 5 years' time, you'd like to sort of be in all the supermarkets, and do you think it's possible?
Yeah, we do actually. And we also have lots of opportunity to export to other countries as well. We're currently exporting to over 16 countries now, including South Africa, Taiwan, Denmark, and we're always looking for new opportunities there. Flavour coffee seems to be something that's there's a demand for the world over. So we think the sky's the limit at the moment.
Absolutely. So where can our listeners find out more information about Beanies?
If they go to www.beaniesflavorco.com, that's our main website, or they can look at Beanies on Facebook, and they'll obviously also find a lot of information there.
Fantastic. Well, good luck. It's a great stand as well. So, yeah, good luck with the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
And there you have it. That's the lovely Beanie coffee. And that was Mark.
I really fancy coffee now.
Now we've listened to that. Yes, absolutely. Right, Justin. Now let's have a good old chat with you about Synergy Grill. Just to explain it, Synergy Grill is a sort of energy-saving commercial gas grill. And Justin Cadbury is the innovator and chairman of this particular concept. And it's about creating a perfect fuel-efficient burner to be used for gas grills to produce better food at a lower energy cost. It's patented, and I have to say...
Three patents.
Wow. I've actually had the pleasure of having a sort of demonstration, a live demonstration of it, and it's remarkable. Would you just like to explain what the technology is in terms of how it burns? So it looks like a normal gas grill. Doesn't it, to some degree.
Yep.
So
it almost looks like
stainless steel gas grill.
Like a big indoor barbecue.
I bet.
That's probably the way that I describe it to a layman.
So you've got your burner as usual. Yeah, you've got your burner as usual, got a grill on top. What's the technology in terms of the heat that's being used?
Right. Well, when you turn on your normal barbecue or grill, which is the same as in any normal restaurant, really gas flows down a pipe. It goes into a burner. You make a flame and you put the food on top. And you try to stop the flame by moving it around, but you're basically having to cook your food on flame. The oils then fall through the air and they go into a fat tray underneath, which ends up
by
clogging up the London drains called fatbergs. And that's what has been going on for the last 30, 40 years. What the Synergy Grill does is your gas comes down the tube, we mix it then with fresh air, which at the moment is free. So 43% of what you're burning is free. And then we impinge that flame across a ceramic bed. And on top of that, we have a vortex system to further spread the heat evenly. And the critical key word is heat. So we will then cook the food on heat, not flame. So you get intense heat, something like 350 degrees centigrade.
But can you actually see a flame as well, though? Or is it just heat?
You can see the flame.
Yeah.
But you're actually cooking off heat. And most good chefs, in fact, all good chefs, like heat, not flame. Mm. All this flame
grill. You can't control flame, can you? It's really
difficult to burns control. And it's, you know, cancer-causing, carcinogenic and all that sort of stuff. So firstly, you are searing the food on intense heat. But then as the natural oils fall through the air, they're then vaporized back through the food. So you retain the succulence and you retain the flavor. Whereas on your normal char grill and every other grill in the world, it goes straight down into a fat tray. Mm.
So you're saying it's about 360 degrees?
Yeah, 360 degrees, and the natural oils go back into the food. Mm. That's what creates the
extra flavor.
So
my oven at home, the highest I can get it is probably 240. And the problem with that is you can't cook things like, in my view, pizzas and stuff like that because you just can't get it hot enough.
Yes. Well, that's in an oven, surely.
That's in a normal oven at home.
Yeah, that's an oven, not a grill, which
is
great.
Yeah. Yeah. But just to put it in context, you know, that if 240 is about as high as I can get it, you know, and it's really, really hot.
Yeah, you're talking another 50% on stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So you're getting it at an incredibly high heat, 360 degrees.
Yes, but also something else quite clever is happening. You're using the natural oils in the grill. And in fact, we've now got the name the Natural Grill Company as well. And we're using those for the secondary source of fuel. So not only is it really creating the flavour you are using. So funnily enough, there's something called thermal shock. If you put a lot of cold food onto a surface, it'll lose its heat. Now, on the Synergy Grill, the exact opposite happens because you are creating an extra source of fuel, and the more you put on top, the more you are shielding, for want of a better word, that heat in, and you're containing it.
A lot of people go to these barbecue cooking schools now, don't they?
Right.
You know that Weber and other people do.
Yes.
And nearly all of them say, don't have a flame.
Yes.
Get your, you know, either your coals or your grill, yes, or whatever, and actually then put the hood down.
Yes.
So people are being taught more and more to cook with heat as opposed to a flame, which is exactly what you're saying.
That's a little bit of a con, though.
Exactly. But because what they're saying is that flames aren't actually a good way of cooking.
They can't control the flame. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. So the thing is, if you shut the lid down, you're actually starving it of oxygen.
Well, you're steaming it as well.
And you're steaming it. Mm. And to go back to your oven, you're really drying out the food. In both the Weber problem and your oven, the problem is that the natural oils are falling down and you're losing them.
And you're losing the best bits.
Whereas we are putting them right back in there. And even on, again, from the commercial side, the shrinkage, which is not something you probably care about at home, but if you're in a restaurant, we do 50% less shrinkage. Now, that's really important for people who are doing things like pork or bacon, crispy bacon.
Yeah.
The size of the bacon is actually very important, what they give their customers.
Now, you told me off before we went on air.
Yeah,
yes, you did. You told me off. Because
stupid of me.
It was silly of you, because I'm in charge here. But what you were saying, and quite rightly, is that we often talk here about ingredients. Get the best ingredients you can, which is what Craig is talking about with his chickpeas as well.
Indeed.
If you don't get the best ingredients, you are not going to make a great meal. But you're saying, actually, what you keep forgetting, Sue, is you keep forgetting to add the other thing. You've got to cook things properly as well. Because even if you have the greatest ingredients, if you don't know what you're doing, you can ruin them.
Completely right.
And cooking, actually, and I think we have to highlight this more, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not just about the ingredients or the raw materials. It's the whole process.
It's
you were saying that you can have the most amazing, like, rare breed tomahawk steak or something like that, and you could absolutely destroy it by cooking it poorly, or even just cooking it on a subpar piece of equipment.
Well, that's true. And also, when we now do the demonstration, in the old days, I used to race around and get some fantastic steak. But actually, that's not a fair trial. You should go and get supermarket raw chicken. We can take raw chicken out of the fridge, then grill it on the singer grill superbly. It'll maintain its succulence and its moisture, and then hand it to you. Now, that is a far harsher test. Mm. No other grill can do that. What a lot of the restaurants do is they'll sort of steam cook it, and then they'll use the grill as a bit of theatre.
They'll sous vide it.
I won't mention any names at all, don't worry. But we know a lot of restaurants who are simply, they're par cooking the chicken.
Absolutely.
Which finishing is losing its flavour, and then finishing off. And that is not a true grill experience.
It's absolutely true. I used to work in a popular hotel chain kitchen, and we would see We don't need to name and shame on this show, so we're all above board.
I like name
something,
and shame.
Something to do with a woman called Paris or something like that. And we would used to, as you say, sear the chicken on the outside and then put it into a tray, put it in the blast chiller, keep it ready till service, and then just warm it up in the steam oven.
Yes, and that, if you don't mind me saying, is not a true grill experience.
No.
I mean, in fact, interestingly enough, we're certified by the Vegetarian Society. And something which I know a lot of people do like is you can put a vegan burger, say, next to a normal meat burger, and there's no cross flavouring because you haven't got a fat tray underneath.
Yeah,
which is going to.
That's a good point.
So there's no.
Now I need to make it, plain. They like lots of other things about the Singer grill, not just that, but it is true, no cross flavouring. Is something that
so that means like no cross contamination. So if you put a bit of beef down and then you put a vegetable
next to some fish, next to some fish or some chicken, or the famous your cheese, the squeaky cheese, I was called.
Halloumi.
Is that right? The halloumi cheese.
We were talking about halloumi earlier. Yes.
Well, a chef turned up and he did two extraordinary things. He did the halloumi cheese on courgette, and he did thing called a monk jack. I don't know if we ever had loin of monk jack. But
so like a venison.
Yes,
to,
it is.
Deer,
and they're thriving everywhere. In fact, if you read the press, they're becoming a bit of a pest eating all the young trees. So that worked.
Well, just put them on your grill if they're pestering you, obviously.
Oh, I'm getting really hungry now. And yes, I've got a lot of grill envy going on.
Yeah, I've got a little grill envy. So Justin, the problem that you've got, though, in marketing terms, and as Craig was saying, marketing and getting the right people behind you and getting sales is really, really important. Otherwise, you're not going to make a business.
Yes.
It's really difficult when you are disrupting a market, though.
Yes.
Because, I mean, as Craig is saying, he's trying to get people to taste his stuff.
Yes.
And then hopefully they'll, you know, go on to buy it.
Yes.
How are you getting people to see how different your Synergy grill is? Because when I went to the demonstration, I was astounded. To clear it up, you just get a Hoover out because there's no drip tray.
You don't get a Hoover. You get
you
get a tiny little vacuum cleaner.
Okay, fine.
Four inches long.
But essentially, what happens is you literally get a layer of dust.
Yes.
You don't get this horrible
fine carbon. Yes.
So you just get all this fine carbon. So you just literally Hoover out. Now that's for somebody who likes stuff to be all nice and clean and tidy.
Yes.
That's amazing. Let alone all these fantastic things that are happening in terms of when you're cooking.
Yes.
Now, bearing in mind you've got those benefits and you're halving somebody's, you know, utility bills from using it.
Right.
How on earth, in a way, when you have so many product benefits, it's even harder to sell.
Well, you've absolutely, I mean, that's exactly right, Sue. You've hit the main point.
True.
It sounds too good to be true as a phrase we hear all the time, followed by seeing is believing. And that is the key answer. That unfortunately, the only people who really understand it are those people who actually see it. Because you can see them thinking, well, it halves the gas bill, food tastes better, all the other things you've said. I mean, even the ventilation shafts, which is a nightmare for a lot of hotels, they are cleaner by 50%. There's a thing in Rills which you might have heard and not have heard of. Well, you might have from your days in that hotel, called the thermocouple. Now, everybody is used in their grill to changing that four times a year. And it doesn't go wrong on Monday morning. It goes wrong on Friday
when
night.
You've got bigger
service. Shut the grill down. Now, we have no thermocouple, which is an advanced process we use. So you can see the listener. You've got to throttle back with all the benefits. Otherwise,
He's overwhelming.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think the answer to your question is the fear of change is the biggest marketing obstacle we've got. But we've done 300 restaurants now. It's the people who combine. It's the forward-looking groups. They want to be with a product where they feel is right for them to be in 5 years' time.
Mm.
It's very easy to go ring up your distributor and say, my grill's gone wrong, what's cheap, what's the discount?
Chap says,
I'm doing 40% off XYZ, and he will buy it.
Mm.
And of course, not all distributors are interested in your gas bill.
Yeah.
So,
but you do have another big problem, I think, in that Craig can rock up at King's Cross Station with, you know, 12 bags of hippies for people to taste.
Yes.
You've got to rock up with a huge gas
Well, the
burner.
Smallest one we do is only 6:30 across. And then we do the
so
900,
just over half a meter or so.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. So we put that in a van or a car. We're more than pleased to take it to you because we know once you see it, you'll buy it. I mean, there's absolutely no logical reason.
How much is that one? I'm trying to think if I can fit it in my kitchen.
Well, that one is £2,500, but you would get that
That's
back.
That's not bad, actually.
Well, hang on a moment. Let me just tell you one critical fact. You get the entire payback in the first year. Now, that's not in your house, but I'm going on the basis you're
of a commercial kitchen.
A restaurant open for 9 to 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. You get the entire payback in a year. I mean, if you equate that to a car, if you save the cost of a new car entirely on fuel in 1 year, you'd use that awful phrase again. It's a no-brainer. But you have to get people really thinking about it and also being excited about food. And not many finance directors are excited about food, and not many chefs are excited about
the
saving
finance.
Gas. You have to get both of them in the room at the same time.
Craig, this is the first time I'm guessing you've heard of Synergy Grill. Bearing in mind, I've got little pictures here, you haven't got them in front of you. Bearing in mind what you've heard, what's your thoughts? I mean, you're in the food industry.
I think it's a really interesting concept. I think your biggest opportunity and your issue that you have to solve for at the same time is how do you actually physically explain the benefits of this in, you know, 30 seconds to a mass market audience? Because clearly there's a huge amount of benefit in what you're offering. It's how do you communicate that to a mass audience with, you know, with a limited budget, I guess, because you...
Yep.
I, 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 I don't know how much you're spending on marketing, but I'm guessing that would be
not
quite
as
expensive.
Much as you.
Well, I'll tell you the thing that explained it for me. So we were kind of getting together just before the recording, and Justin said, "Oh, I've got an iPad here. I just filmed this video last night just to kind of show you guys what this is all about." And he just flipped the screen out, and 30 seconds later, we had finished watching this video, which perfectly demonstrated this idea of
you've got raw bacon not burning.
Yeah, raw bacon on a gas flame. On top of a, you know, like a classic slatted grill, like you would have on a barbecue or like a grill pan, something like that. And it was, you know, suddenly it was obvious what we're looking at here. And so I would say video is the way to go. It's the way you can get that explanation across in the shortest amount of time. But then obviously then the proof is in the pudding of actually the taste.
You also need a top chef. And we've got, you know, several top chefs who are really kindly supporting it through literally no reason, no financial gain to them at all. I promise you, we don't sponsor any of them. But they really do step up to the plate and say using this grill has changed their food quality hugely.
Mm. Can I just ask you a little bit about your family, Justin? Because you're called Justin Cadbury, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And you're the great-grandson of John Cadbury, the inventor of Cadbury's chocolate. So it seems like the inventing gene has run through your family. Have I got that right?
Yes, I think so. I can't really say it was much to do with my family background. I got involved in this.
But you've got an inventor's brain. Like your great grandfather.
Yes, that is true. I think inventors are maddening people to be with because they keep thinking you can further improve it and further improve it. Mm. And if you look at the way the Americans tend to get their product on the market, they get it 80% right and they launch it. And they, frankly, sort out the rest when it's on the market.
Well, so Apple are renowned for that, of course.
Yeah.
Not 95% and that's it, let's launch it.
And that's something else we found. I mean, a lot of people do say, well, you've spent several years and really quite a lot of money getting it. We have had to learn from grassroots upwards. In other words, you can be using a switch and it'll work perfectly, you know, 20 times. And then on the 30th time, it won't, or the 300th time. Again, in the laboratory, you see a switch and you put your thumb on it and you carefully press it. In the kitchen, the chef walks by and says, somebody turned the switch on. And if he's got a wooden thing in his hand, he just gives the switch a bit of a poke with it. Yeah. He doesn't put his thumb, you know, gently on it. So you have to have a very robust machine.
Mm.
So you have to learn from grassroots experience. So that
Absolutely.
Does take a bit of time.
And the sort of era of Cadbury and Bourneville and all those, you know, all those a long time ago, Victorian times and before, a lot of those entrepreneurs at the time felt quite paternal towards their workers and felt that they should be giving something back. I mean, there was a bit of that going on.
Yes.
What do you think about Craig and his links, you know, with the sort of African thing? Because it feels like that responsibility and is coming back, actually, for entrepreneurs very often.
Yes, I think he's entirely right. And in the break, we were just having a quick chat about South Africa, because actually we're looking to manufacture this in South Africa, because it'll give them a pride as well in doing it. Obviously, we'll have to train them over the technology. But food is so much the most important thing in the world, probably.
Mm.
And I think if you can work as a team, so you're involving everybody from social responsibility. I was interviewed because we don't let any fat go down the drains, obviously.
Mm.
And there's a huge growing problem in this country for fat burgers. And it is, in my mind, absolutely incomprehensible that people are allowed to use a grill with a fat tray because it's blocking up all the drains. I know they say they stop it going down, but actually anybody who's spent time in a kitchen knows.
And the problem is now there's so many of these products in the supermarkets that just say, empty the whole of this bottle down your drain and it will clear everything.
Yeah, and it just moves the problem further down.
Exactly.
And
people think, oh, that's great now because I can actually bung loads of stuff down the plug hole because I can just use one of these things. Sustainably, not a good idea, is it?
No, it doesn't sound good to me. I wanted to pick up on a word you used just a couple of sentences ago, fatbergs. Are we talking like a fat iceberg?
Yes, there was a program, it was on the national news actually, and you get these huge drains of over 3 metres across, and there's a hole in it of less than maybe 12 inches.
Wow.
And the rest of it is entirely fat, congealed fat.
Unbelievable.
And the only way you can do that is to blast it out, and that means you crack the roads and you then create huge chaos on the traffic road. So it's a very serious problem.
And I'm
really hoping there'll be future legislation exactly the same for cleaning the ventilation.
How are we going to do that? We'll go around people's houses and say, you know, you're not allowed to put.
Are you using a grill with a fat tray? If they are,
this is mostly
stopped.
A commercial thing, though, rather than a domestic thing. Although I'm sure a lot of that stuff in the sewer systems is you know, from both commercial and domestic.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it is mainly from commercial. From the domestic, it's interesting. I was interested to hear maybe from Craig. We find there's a new market, which is especially for, in fact, in South Africa or Australia, where people are now moving towards their food outside. Now, we still have the image, the English have the terrible image of the barbecue and the flame-burnt charcoal sausage. They take it very seriously.
America, and even more so.
We think the big future is outdoor cooking.
Oh, my God, that means more men are going to cook, she said, being incredibly sexist.
No, but you'd like that. That gives you more time to do what you want to do.
Bring on the grill slinger.
Yeah, bring on the grill. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because this Synergy grill actually looks quite similar to my outdoor cooking range, as I like to call it, rather than a barbecue.
Yeah.
And I think there's some absolutely amazing stuff going on in that industry.
Yeah.
When I was searching online for, you know, the perfect grill to buy, I found some amazing websites. I mean, it was like grill porn. It was just ridiculous how you have these completely purpose-built outdoor spaces, which looks like a commercial kitchen, but it's in some fancy person's
backyard. It's a bit of status, though, isn't it? Come on, it's boys' toys little bit.
I think I mentioned it before on the show.
I love it when you go to B&Q and you see these guys, right? And the wife's obviously said, you need to cut the hedge because it's really getting on my nerves. And you can see them going up and down the hedge trimmer thing. Yeah. You know, the bigger, the better, with all these spikes.
Yeah, and they do it once.
And they've probably got a garden 4 foot square, but it doesn't matter. You know, I've got to come back with them. I'm a big hedge trimmer.
I let my girlfriend trim the hedge.
Yeah, all right, you do.
not interested in that.
But the thing is, you know, grills are a little bit the same. You know,
well, they've not changed. They've not. I mean, the outdoor barbecues really—they haven't changed. They're stainless steel boxes with shiny knobs on. They still have got this flame. You need to cook on intense heat.
I like light-up knobs, if I may say.
Light-up knobs, okay. I'll remember that in our next design. Thank you.
I think we need to get back on track here, Sue.
Yeah, Craig is just shaking his head and trying not to get involved in this one. Are you a barbecuer?
I'm not a barbecue, unfortunately.
It would ruin your seat.
I don't have enough time to barbecue, unfortunately.
That's fair enough.
I do think there's a really great move to having food outside more, which is fantastic, I think. And I think people are getting a bit more adventurous. You know, it's not just sausages and all that. And fish is great on
cheese,
the barbecue.
And cheese, I mean, and halloumi. I promise you I could change your mind about barbecuing. It's
and some great vegetarian stuff like asparagus and courgettes on the barbecue. Wonderful. Absolutely. Really, really nice. I'm getting really hungry. Can you tell me just a little bit about some of your charity work? Because you're also chairman of the Douglas Bader Foundation, aren't you?
Yes.
Tell us for people who don't know who Douglas Bader is.
Have you seen Reach for the Sky? Well, as you know, he was a great Spitfire hero. He lost both his legs, and he ended up being a major force in the Second World War. What we try and do with the charity is, if you were to lose your legs, it's not just you who's impacted, but your family. It has a huge, huge effect on your family life. And you can often feel very lonely and very
isolated
from it. And so what the inspiration, the key is to inspire people that it's just another great challenge in life. And if you're with people who have lost their legs and done great things, it's hugely inspiring. Mm. So we set the charity up. This was a bit before I joined, actually. A chap called our chief marshal, Sir Dennis Crowley Milling.
It's a good name, isn't it? It's better than Sue Nelson. Boring.
And he, anyway, so he got me involved. My father was, in fact, also in the Fleet Air Arm and a test pilot, and a great friend with Douglas. So they got me in, and gosh, the years have rolled by. We sponsor grants for people learning to fly as much as we can around the children.
Yeah.
So you get children. It's not only if they've lost their legs, amputees. It's if they're impaired. And we give grants to people to really inspire them to go forward and do things in life. And we've grown quite well.
That's fantastic.
That's amazing. That's great. So just coming back to you, Craig, where can people find out about Hippies? Now, it's spelled HIPPEAS, Hippies. hippies. I'm presuming, well, you're taking over the world anyway, and it's in more
trying
and more
to.
Supermarkets and obviously in Starbucks. But if somebody wants to find out about your product and also the charity work, where should they go?
Yeah, so they can go online to the website and go on to www.hippies.com. And they can get more information. There's also information there in terms of where we're currently stocked. So watch this space, but we'll probably be...
Watch this space. And I would recommend the Sweet and Smoking. That's my favourite. And it might wean me off what's it.
I hope it does.
I hope it does
I only
as well.
Have the odd packet a year.
It does.
I don't have many, but it might wean me off of what's it. They are
snacking for the better, one chickpea at a time.
Measurably better. Measurably better. Really, really like the charity work you're doing. And Justin, where can we find out about Synergy Grills? So if you're a chef or in the business?
Yes, you'd look on the website synergygrill.com. But for the private market, we've actually got naturalgrill.co.uk.
Oh, I might be looking at that.
Because we are, we've actually got quite a few people now who are using them outdoors. And the key thing that Craig mentioned was time. And the beauty of this is you go and switch the thing on and it's ready to go in 15 minutes. And if you get the usual call, oh, I'm terribly sorry, I'm going to be late for lunch, the traffic's bad, it doesn't matter. And now, for something like your charcoal, it really does matter if they're late. So on this, because it's on natural ceramics, it doesn't matter. You pour yourself another glass of wine and wait till they come.
Well, you've got to check that out.
And then it cleans itself at the end. So there's no, that's the big thing.
And then you
get
your
Hoover. Off down the dry.
You get your Hoover.
You get your tiny little
brilliant
sugar lump.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And don't forget, you can catch all our podcasts on www.foodtalk.co.uk. Thank you to Justin and Craig, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks very much. See you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.